Hey, Sens fans, this is Stuntman Stu, and you're listening to the Sixth Sense Podcast. I caught a glimpse of professional evil on the day our poor hearts died. I fell in love with professional evil on the day you left my side. I see tons of people looking lost and lethal, and I think we're all the same. So I scale a steeple and I take a leap, and I just can't.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Sixth Sense Podcast. Joining me in studio is Graham Creech. What's going on?
Not too much. How are you doing, buddy? It's been, it's weird.
Better than Rob Ford.
Yeah, that's true. I don't want to jinx anything, but we've got into the studios. Everything seems to be working fine so far. We haven't tried calling anyone yet, but...
There'll be hiccups.
First time in three tries.
Yeah, no kidding. Should be a good show. We haven't been in here in a while, like you said, unfortunately. Lots of things to hit on, though. Lots of topical issues to talk about. Rob Volman, who penned the Hockey Abstract, wants to come on, talk a little sense. So we'll get a little analytical take on what is going wrong with the Ottawa Senators. I know you have your own thoughts on what's plaguing the Senators thus far. So let's just start off with the goaltending situation, first of all. Craig Anderson got hurt against Dallas. Valerie Nichushkin?
Don't ask.
Made a strong power move. Kind of deked through Erik Karlsson. Made a nice move. Went to the net hard. Jammed his knee up against Craig Anderson's head. Kind of fell on him as well. Anderson's out. Jammed neck. Kind of a scary scene. See him carted off the ice on a stretcher. He's turned out to be okay. Nothing more. I think he missed, one game? Two games? Before he was back
up? I think he was backing up the third, yeah.
So... he's doing fine. In his absence, Robin Lehner carried the team, won three straight. Craig Anderson's first game back against Philadelphia, a 5-0 shit show.
That was brutal.
Terrible to watch. But I wouldn't pin any of that on Craig Anderson. But another goaltending controversy in the nation's capital, perhaps? What's your take on what you would do versus Boston tomorrow night?
I would like to see Robin Lehner in the net. Like I think that he's the best goalie right now. I think he's already surpassed him. He's playing very well, and this guy's a superstar. Like you could tell when he won the Calder Cup and the MVP in the playoffs that he's
a
winner.
This guy's a superstar.
He's a winner. He's going to be a superstar. It's written all over him. Everything, his makeup. But
he doesn't wear makeup.
His mental makeup.
Gotcha. You have to be a little bit more specific.
Come on. you can see it. It's written all over this guy. But... Paul McLean has come out, and Anderson's his number one goalie, and that's what he's adamant about. He tossed him in the net. He's healthy. They lost 5-0. I don't see how you could go back to Robin Lehner for Boston because his guy is Craig Anderson. So if he puts Robin Lehner in, he's going back to his number two after giving his number one chance, playing arguably the best team in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
Yeah. How many contenders would you list ahead of Boston in the East?
Pittsburgh? Based off the start of the season, maybe Pittsburgh.
Or just thinking long term.
They're tough. Picture. Maybe, yeah. Well,
I don't mean
Tampa's
hottest
there,
start.
But I mean, yeah. I know what you're saying. It does. If you go back to Robin Lehner, though, and he wins, then you've kind of opened yourself up to all these different criticisms. Like, all of a sudden, you ride the hot hand against Columbus. I think they play also Minnesota
Sunday,
next
yeah.
week. So those are some winnable games as well. I don't know when, if they do go to Lehner and he wins, I don't know when you go back to Craig Anderson. And that's a problem as well, because here you have a guy who's a veteran who seems to thrive when he gets a high workload. He seems to thrive when he faces a lot of rubber. And I think Ottawa's in a precarious position because they want to get his trade value high. Whether they trade him during the season this year, I don't think they will. Or move him this offseason, which seems like the more likely thing that they'll do. They want to drive his value up as much as possible because he's an expendable asset. And I think even looking back at last season, even though he was playing well, he was an expendable asset, especially because he was making so much money and the Senators at the time had two in-house solutions who could have carried that. I think they could have done maybe they wouldn't have performed at such a high level than at the bar that Anderson set last season, but at least they would have had two in-house guys who performed well for not a lot of money.
And Craig Anderson played unbelievable against Montreal, and I think he's capable of of winning a couple playoff series. I'm not trying to knock him at all. I obviously Robin Leonard is the future of this club, and he's playing better at this point in the season. But if you're going to back Craig Anderson, I don't see how you could flip-flop already one game after you win him, your number one, and reestablish that he's your number one. Put him in. He gets lit up. The team sucks. One of the worst games they've ever played. And then you go back to Leonard? I don't know. That's not giving Anderson much confidence, and it's not being consistent with what you've been telling everyone.
Or maybe they just want to insulate him for next week. A couple of easier matchups. The likelihood of Ottawa beating Boston the way that they're playing right now isn't probably very high. Maybe they'll be more focused on tomorrow night and come out and play a hell of a game like they did against Detroit last month. But if Leonard loses, it makes it pretty easy to go back to Anderson. A couple of soft games, get his confidence back up, insulate him a bit, and then go from there. So maybe they could do that as well. Hey. It's tough to say. Like, it's regardless of what Paul McLean does, there's going to be criticism.
For
and
sure.
We've seen this. Social media, criticism. No matter what you say right now, somebody will not like it.
He's the reigning coach of the year. He's been a finalist the year before. He knows his guys. Everyone is commenting and have basing their opinions from the outside. He knows his players. If it was me, I'd probably go back to Leonard, I would have kept Leonard against Philly. I don't have a problem with him starting Anderson tomorrow.
While we're on the subject of Paul McLean's coaching, it's pretty much the roster that we have right now is pretty much returned from last season with a few minor tweaks to the lineup. Gonchar was gone, so obviously you've had Weirkoch and Cowan kind of playing combined minutes on the second pairing, although that they've been broken up of late. From a system perspective, though, you'd figure that this roster that has kind of been kept together for the last 2.5 seasons since Clouston's been canned, they've had time to gel and get things together. What's going on? Why are they so disjointed right now? Why is there absolutely no support from the forwards in the defensive zone? Why are the defensemen struggling so badly to move the puck? What's going on? What's your take?
It's tough to say, but it's definitely you can tell all season from game one against Buffalo, they've had no support exiting their zone. Like their breakout's a mess. Their neutral zone and their own zone, there's no support. There's basically one support guy, and then there's nothing else. So there's no options. The defensemen have no options. The defensemen look slower. Weirkoch, Cowan, basically everyone back there. Doesn't look like they're getting to the puck quick and getting it out quick. And you saw in a couple of the Philly goals, like they just were running all over them. The forwards aren't supporting them as well either. There's a couple forwards that have problems getting out of their zone as it is. And I think what they want to do is they want to be a puck possession team. So that's where the other thing you're seeing problems with is there's some guys that aren't so good at carrying the puck over the opposition's blue line. Even though that might be the system they want to make, sometimes you got to know when to just dump chip and chase. That's one of the big problems. But the other big problem is they don't have two lines offensively that they can trust right now. Jason Spezza hasn't found chemistry with anyone yet. Whether that's his fault or they just don't have the wingers there or they're not using the right guys, that's something they're going to have to figure out. Hopefully it starts tomorrow against Boston. But you could tell the whole season they haven't been able to get out of their zone.
It's been a mess. I think with the exception of the tourist line, they're kind of lacking that defensively responsible core right now up front. It seems just like everybody, as soon as the puck gets turned over within the defensive zone, you got two guys who are already leaving the zone, breaking out, expecting like an offensive pass, an outlet pass to get going. And
remember how many times last year we saw them throw bombs to the other blue line, like the stretch passes? They have one guy going for that. I haven't noticed that as much lately, but early on in the season, that's what was happening. So there's no support. They gotta.
Gaps are too big.
Keep it simple for now.
Gaps are too big. Anyways.
Who would you toss on Spezza's line?
Well, that's the problem. Right now, Milan Mikolic and Jason Spezza have been getting killed at even strength. I know Spezza's production has been pretty good. He was a point-per-game player, but he's also got, 6 points in 2 games versus Detroit, New Jersey. He played 2 exceptionally good games, those games. Other than that, though, it's been a little bit painful to watch at times. He's just once they get hemmed into the zone, they're not getting out. And then finally they regain the puck, but they have no energy. So go off on a change. And it's really, really tough to watch because you'd hope at some point that Paul McLean could surround him with talent and insulate him a little bit. But Ottawa doesn't have the personnel right now who are playing well to do it. Colin Greening has been a guy in the past who we could lean on and say, all right, help Spezza get going. You're the defensively responsible one. Go out there and make some, go out there and make something happen with him. And no. Same with Malik McCullough. He's just, he doesn't look himself. I don't know. I don't know if it, like, the knee's bothering that much. I haven't noticed his skating really deteriorate that much over the past little while.
Well, you've he doesn't have that breakaway speed anymore. He used to.
I don't think he has
guys.
For years.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, he hasn't been that player for me for 2 years now, at least.
I agree.
So, it's who do you turn to in this situation? Like, they've got a Corey Conacher a few times, but again, for like a small. Skill guy who's brought in to be like, you know, a secondary scorer, his ability to carry the puck isn't existent. He's been more of a chip and chase guy, which is kind of uncharacteristic for a guy his size. Chris Neal, you've listened to Spezza's interview where they asked him about his line mates and he seemed a little bit,
you could see it in his body language on the ice, he wasn't happy.
I don't want to say he was sulking out there though.
He wasn't thrilled with the offensive opportunity he had. You could tell he getting the puck, he was chipping in and changing. Took some of the shortest shifts I've ever seen him take.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, even then in the Dallas game, I noticed he was trying to dump the puck in a couple times, and he was just firing it like half-heartedly, and then the defenseman on Dallas would just glove it down, go back the other way, and it's just like, what are we doing? But in terms of who you want to get playing with Spezza, I don't know if they have the guys internally to do it right now. And that's the worst part. Like, if you're dealing with a broken Milan McCulloch and a struggling Colin Greening, who's never really shown that he can be anything more than a potentially good third-line guy, your alternative is Mika Zibanejad, and they haven't shown any confidence in him whatsoever.
Obviously, there's something there that the coaching staff still needs to work with him. They're seeing something because he gets opportunities, but it doesn't last long.
Well, they see the tools, right? Like everyone else, they see the tools. They see a kid who can skate, who doesn't mind throwing his weight around.
And he shoots the puck.
He can shoot the rock. He's still averaging. I think I was looking at his numbers this afternoon. I think he's still averaging 2.1 shots per game, and it's been consistent over the course of the two years and 10 games that he's played here.
I think they need to give him a longer look.
I wonder if in his case, it's they see the tools, but they know there's more talent there than what's getting produced. I know he has 4 goals. I think he's tied for 4.
I don't think they're worried about that. I think what they're seeing is just some of the play in his own end and just some of the decisions he's making. Not to say that I'm not trying to rip him. He's not playing terribly, but obviously there's something the coaching staff isn't happy with when he gets on that line.
But here's a question for you. He's not the only guy who's struggling with his game right now. And we've seen a number of veterans get punished for undisciplined play, poor defensive coverage, poor lapses in the defensive zone. Like, Jerry Cowan is still in the lineup, and I'm struggling to figure out why. He's seen time on the first pairing with Erik Karlsson. Maybe they're trying to insulate his minutes a little bit. Ditto for Chris Neal playing on the first line. He's taken undisciplined penalties all season. There he is on the line with Jason Spezza. And you're just kind of, from a fan's perspective, not that we're criticizing Paul McLean or his decision-making, but I can kind of understand Mika Zibanejad trying to seek out his coach after practice yesterday, have a 10-minute discussion saying, all right, what do I need to do? Or what are you seeing that you'd like me to do better?
There's nothing wrong with that. Good communication. He wants to see how he can improve and what the coaching staff's unhappy with and hopefully get to that spot. Because obviously, that's the ideal option. He gives that line the best chance offensively. There's no better place person that's not on that top line.
Yeah, unless you look externally, there's no.
Well,
other
that's
solution.
What I mean. Internally, he's their best option to get a successful.
And I mean,
line
if you look at the farm
production.
Team in the AHL, unless you're expecting Mike Hoffman to come in and light it up, or Mark Stone, who just returned from injury, there's not a lot of opportunity. For Spezza to play with decent offensive players right now.
It's just, sure.
And Matt, I don't know. Some of the decision makers, Matt Cassian getting a regular turn since Eric Condra went down. Drives me nuts. I don't see the utility in keeping that guy around, personally.
And we've talked about this.
But nobody's fighting this year. There are no fights. They're having gone and watched to a number of games this season. The number of teams that are carrying goons is Toronto, and that's about it. and Buffalo. With those two teams within the division, I'm assuming Boston will be like that tomorrow night. You'll have Sean Thornton or Lucic. But I don't get it. You're carrying eight defensemen?
That's the problem, is they have eight defensemen and they haven't decided what they're going to do back there. Because, to be honest, I wouldn't move Mark Borowiecki anywhere right now. I think he's probably one of their best defensemen they have that's playing right now. Obviously, they don't want to send Jared Cowan down. I think maybe he could use a game to sit in the press box. I wouldn't want that guy being a healthy scratch too often, but maybe use a game, let him refocus and take a look from upstairs, see how everything's developing.
Yeah, what are they going to do? I was looking at comments last year made by Paul McLean, and it had to do with the number of injuries that Ottawa sustained and how he talked about, on the blue line specifically, how it created an opportunity for guys like Patrick Wierkocz to play and thrive. And I think Greiba wound up getting some games as well. So it gave them a chance to develop. I think right now you're seeing a guy like Borowiecki come in, get that development time. But at some point you have to call a spade and figure out what you have with your Greibas, your Borowieckis, your Corvos, and your Phillips. That's your third pairing, essentially. And you're going to have to pair it, whether it's I think Corvo to this point in the season has been effective for the role that he's played. He's provided some, you know, modest offense in the games that he's been in. Phillips, who's in the last year of his deal, same old. I don't think he's changed much. He's the same player, love him or hate him. And then you have two guys whose ceilings aren't that high, and one's out playing the other. Like, at some point, you have to figure out, what are we going to do with an Eric Greiber and Mark Borowiecki? Are they anything more than this? No. What do we do? And same with Corvo. Yeah, if he's not going to get in consistently to be an offensive guy because you have Kyle Turris now on the first power play unit and you have Wierkocz on the second power
and
play
Carlson
unit.
And Carlson playing two minutes.
What do you need Joe Corvo for? Like, make that decision. Get a guy out. Let the kids play, or play the veteran who gives you that, you know, that little niche. Get a body out. Bring up a forward who can help. I'm tired of watching Matt Cassian struggle on the fourth line and not contribute anything.
I agree with you, but that's why they're doing it, is they have to make a decision on the back end before they can bring a forward up. What I would have liked to seen is when Pajot was still here, when he got the game in after his injury, I would have liked to see them sit Colin Greening down for one game while Pajot was still here.
But Pajot was struggling as well, right?
Yeah, but they gave him that game.
And he needs to play. That's the other part of it, too. Like, playing that guy six, 8 minutes on the fourth line is not going to do him any favors,
no,
especially when he's missing time.
But while he was here, I would have liked to see them sit Greening down for one game.
Oh, for sure. Even Cowan as well. Like, guys who've been struggling, sit them out. Deservedly so. They're not playing well. But I could talk all day about Colin Greening. Anyways. So we're talking about internal options. Do you think, like, how far away are we from seeing this team actually make a move to shake things up? We're almost at the 20-game mark, so that's a quarter of the season.
What's the first thing they do?
By the end of this weekend, we'll be at the 20-game mark. After Sunday's game against Columbus, 20 games in. If they lose both games this weekend, I wouldn't be surprised to see something happen.
Where? Defensively?
Too many bodies. Too many bodies. Whether it's a forward, defenseman.
What's their biggest need right now, though? Bring in a top four defenseman?
Top four defenseman, top six forward to complement Spezza.
That's tough to do, to address those two needs.
Yeah. Well, that's true. I mean, you saw Calgary trade two prospects for Ladislav Smead. I don't even know if Smead's that effective of a defenseman anymore. He's still relatively young, mind you, but I don't think he's been in Edmonton forever. I don't think he's the be-all, end-all. But in terms of, like, a stabilizing force, like, I wouldn't have said Sergei Gonchar at $5 million was going to be a great player, but he was a stabilizing force. You could count on to play like 22 minutes a night responsibly. He made Patrick Wierkocz better. Jared Cowan hasn't made Patrick Wierkocz better this year. Mind you, Patrick Wierkocz was also playing his offside. So maybe it was a bit naive to think that Cowan and Wierkocz could play top 4 minutes to start the season. So maybe you afford those guys a little bit of time because you don't want to trade any of your assets to bring in a top four defenseman. But like you said, you're going to have to pay a price. And I think you're probably, at this point of the season, you're going to have to pay a premium price to bring in a guy. I don't know. Maybe it's a bad draft year, so maybe you can move a second-round pick to bring in a top-four guy. But is that a long-term solution? That's the other counter-argument. Any guy you bring in is probably going to be a rental. A 1 or 2 year window guy, and that's it. So tough questions. I wouldn't want to be Brian Murray right now. Especially with the raised expectations. I think you have a fan base that's been sitting on this rebuild for the past 3 years, even though I think this is officially the third year of the rebuild, as Eugene Melnyk would like to say. Is this team in a position to start spreading its assets then, trying to address short-term weaknesses? I don't know. I really don't know. Like, they paid a premium to get Bobby Ryan.
I mean, still love that deal.
Oh, for sure. I think Bobby Ryan's better than advertised when he, you know, coming in. Like, I think everybody had question marks about this kid. You know, he's young. Why would Anaheim give up a young kid when they have, you know, a bunch of aging vets on their team? I think it had to raise red flags for some people. For me, it did anyways. But it's tough. Like, they've given up three future assets for Ryan. Can they afford to give up more to bring in some short-term solution? I don't know. And, I mean, you're probably not going to trade Craig Anderson now. How could you? There's no one in the system now. Ben Bishop's gone.
Lots of questions.
Who do you trade? Like Mike Hoffman? Mike Hoffman just cleared waivers and didn't get claimed. I know a lot of teams are up against the cap and they don't have the capacity to take a guy like that on.
Either way, that's not going to net you something to address what they're looking for.
No. I don't think there's anyone in Binghamton, with the exception of Cody Ceci, who could. But, I mean, you're not going to trade that guy. And that's it's weird. Ottawa's got a weird system right now. With the exception of Ceci and Zibanejad and possibly the high reward, high risk boomer bust candidates and like guys like Stone, Hoffman, Pettersson. I think Pajot will have an easier time fulfilling his ceiling than most of the other guys, but there's not a lot of high end skill. With the exception of Zibanejad and CeCe, I don't think there's like high end skill prospects within the system. So can they trade some of that depth fodder who probably project as bottom six guys, bottom four defensemen? I don't know. Would they want to? I don't know. So maybe they end up trading draft picks to fulfill a short-term need. But again, you're spreading your assets then if you... Let's say Spets or Ryan leaves. Worst case scenario. Those guys leave. You have no one internally who can replace those guys. Like, Turris's line can go up, but all of a sudden, you have no one to insulate them, whether it's a Ryan or a Spets. That's the worst case scenario. That's the worst case scenario.
They're going to just have to fix this problem internally right now.
I don't think there's any other choice. Like right now, you're probably looking at bad contracts or guys on one-year deals who will probably not be worth whatever you're giving up. Just rentals. Realistically speaking.
A lot of their problems are fixable.
Oh, you'd hope so. It's the same group of players that we've had essentially for the last 2.5 seasons. There's no excuse why these guys can't figure it internally. Can they do it? Probably. Will the organization or the fans have the patience to watch it unfold? Who knows? Brian Murray's never been afraid to pull the trigger on a deal.
Does that scare you?
No, not necessarily. I think he's made enough deals with an eye on the future. I mean, like, even today I was getting into it with a few people on Twitter regarding Craig Anderson versus Ben Bishop, whether it was the right decision at the time. And I think there's arguments to be made on both sides of the deal, but you look at what Brian Murray's done, like pulling the trigger on the Runblad trade. Like, he knows when to sell high on certain prospects. And we still don't know what Jakob Silverberg or Stefan Nason or that 2014 first-round pick will be. But I think, to his credit, he's known when to move players at the right times over the last 2.5 years. But historically, Brian Murray's also been that guy who can get you to a certain point in the organizational development contention curb. But he has trouble taking your team from a good team and making it a great team. And that's where, you know, that's where Brian Burke got the reputation in Anaheim, right? Like, he built off Brian Murray's moves. So is that fair? The jury's still out. We'll see what he does. I think the next 2 years are going to be fascinating watching Brian Murray try and deal and navigate this organization through the Jason Spezza contract and the Bobby Ryan contract. Are those guys going to stay? What are you willing to pay as a small market team to keep those guys? I think you almost have to look internally, because until one of those players is signed long term, how can you afford to make a mistake? Really, like, if you spread your assets too thin, then you don't have anyone within the system who can like come in and step in and replace those guys. Or you risk mortgaging the future for, what, a year and a half window now? I don't know. It's dangerous, dangerous water to tread.
They just got to fix what's broken right now in their system. They spent 43 minutes working on their breakout. They realize that's where their biggest problem is. They're getting goaltending. They're scoring goals. They can take care of the puck. They'll be okay. They can worry about the next 2 years.
Are you nervous? Obviously, we've seen Erik Karlsson progress. I think last time we were talking off air, we were talking about how Karlsson looks like he's regaining a step. Have you seen anything similar to Jared Cowan?
I wouldn't say that I've seen him improve yet this year, but something that I do like is that you can kind of see him getting that. He does have that nasty attitude, which I wasn't sure he had in his first year. I was like, oh, this is a big guy. I haven't really seen him get nasty yet, but I think he has a bit of nasty in him. And that's what I love about Mark Borowiecki. I love that he's bringing that to the defense right now, because I do think that they're not nasty enough. There's not enough jam in there. And that's what we need. I would like a guy like that on every pairing.
It looks like they're trying to overcompensate for their lack of speed or mobility even right now. They're collapsing a lot and giving the offensive forwards a lot of space to work with, because it looks like they're afraid of getting beat one-on-one. Is that something that you've noticed too? Or?
Well, yeah. If you have a skill forward taking on one-on-one with Chris Phillips, Jared Cowan, Patrick Wierkosch, Eric Ryba, they're going to get beat. Chris Phillips does have pretty good gap control, and he has a good stick, but let's be honest, he's never had the quickest jets in the league. So that is an issue. I think they're a little bit too slow back there. Obviously, Cowan is having a little bit slower time adjusting. I'm not on that wagon that's calling for his head and ripping him apart, because I do think he's still going to be a good defenseman. He's having a tough time right now, and he missed a full season with hip surgery. So I'm not throwing him under the bus, but they have to start figuring it out, and they have to start figuring out which six are going to play a majority of the minutes. Get something going here. Every game, there's a different defenseman coming into the lineup.
It's just absolutely painful. It's different combinations as well. It's not just new guys coming into the lineup. It's Mark Bathot's on the second pairing one game. Now he's back up with Erik Karlsson. You have Cowan and Wierkosch playing top 4 minutes, and then they get split up. And then Wierkosch is going back to his other side. And then
I think Bathot coming back with Karlsson, I really do like that, because how comfortable did they look as a pairing together last year? Like, they gelled instantly.
Oh, those 5 games were marvelous.
You know what I mean?
Oh, no, absolutely. And you know what? More than anything at this point, the blue line has been so bad. I'd rather see those guys play 25 to 30 a night, similar to what's going on in Minnesota with Suter. I'd rather see that happen, just to kind of get over the short-term hiccups. Maybe you risk overplaying them a little bit, but I'd rather overplay them and live with the mistakes than have to rely on guys like Cowan a little bit too much right now.
I think that moving Mathot to his offside, just being a left-handed shot, playing on the right side, I think he's looked a little bit more uncomfortable than he has when he's playing with Erik. Just because there's little things, that situations in the game that happen with their breakout, that it's a little bit harder to do on the other side. And I know playing in the NHL, he should be, like, anyone should be able to play either side. And I'm not saying he can't play it, but I just think it simplifies his game if he's back playing on the left side. It'll just help them support each other better behind the net, be able to go D to D, and then quickly get the puck out of the zone. So I do like that he's back with Erik, and I think he's more effective on that pairing.
Have you, while we're speaking about Erik, have you seen enough silver linings right now with this team to make you think that this is a team that could fulfill expectations that everyone had for them before the start of the season?
I didn't see them as a lock to make the playoffs when everyone was talking about them before the season started. I thought they were a good team, but I saw some of these holes that we're seeing now.
But I think I think everybody kind of recognized them as well. Like, you look at a guy like Jared Cowan, you're like, oh, he hasn't played in a year. How is he going to be, especially if they throw him in the top 4 minutes? And, you know, you see that kind of slow adjustment from him. We saw it with Carlson for like a handful of 10 games where you could tell he's not up to the same speed pre-injury that everyone had gotten used to or accustomed to. And I think you kind of look at it and you don't blame the organization for going out and making like an insulating move, bringing in like a veteran who can kind of stem the tide a little bit, at least short term. I don't know if you can blame the org for that, but
you also don't want to overpay for something. Like, we talked about, how many times did we talk about the UFA defense class last year?
Oh, it was terrible.
It was awful. So you want them to overspend on a mediocre player to fix the problem for a year or two, or to mask it a little bit? I don't know. I don't think there was too many upgrades that they could have made on the back end. And I was also looking forward to a full season as Jared Cowan. I thought he would be able to bounce back a little quicker than he has.
But I think the obvious point right now is there's still 60 games left.
That's why it's not a disaster. It's just, it's alarming because it's been, what, 18 games, and they just, you can tell that they haven't.
Does that Elliot Friedman stat bother you? The November 1st? If you're more than 4 points back at the end of the day, you're hard-pressed to make it. Ottawa was 5 points back.
It's a different playoff system now. There's the crossover. That Metropolitan Division has been so bad, although Philly looks like they're starting to figure it out a little bit.
And the strength of Ottawa's schedule to start the season was a bit ridiculous.
They went through their West trip. They've already played Anaheim twice, San Jose twice. They'll be playing in their own division. They'll have a chance. Stamkos' injury certainly helps a little bit.
That's true, too.
But I'm not worried about this team, but they do have to start figuring it out. I do like a lot of this team. I really, like, I think they're a close group.
You know what I kind of like? Regardless of if they turn it around, great. If they don't, I still think there are enough pieces of fat to trim where they can still make a few personnel moves and just to make things maybe a little bit better, whether it's for this year or next year. I think they can get really creative with the roster, and that's kind of what I'm excited to see, probably more than anything this year, because the season could go anyway, whether they're a playoff team or not.
As long as they're not giving up a top 10 pick, I won't be too upset either way.
Well, it's a bad draft year. I don't blame them for making the Ryan move. I think whether it was a panic move to address Alfredson's departure or not, I don't blame them for trying to bring in someone. Like, I couldn't even fathom where this team would be right now without the performance of Kyle Turris and Bobby Ryan right now, and Clark MacArthur to a lesser extent.
They've been great, and
I don't even know if they would have won more than two games if it wasn't for that line right now.
They need to
like
find.
On Twitter, I asked the other day on Twitter, with the exception of the Detroit game where they played a full 60 minutes, has there been one other game where the Senators have stood out playing a full 60 minute game where you're like, all right, they really deserve to win that game tonight? Nothing stands out.
Nothing really.
No.
Even that first game in Buffalo, they traded chances all night.
Mm-hmm. They just do not look like the same team that they've been for the last two seasons under McLean, unfortunately. But there's no reason to think they can't turn it around, which is good.
I think they can, and that's why, their problem right now is fixable. And that's what they spent 43 minutes doing yesterday.
Are you concerned with Jason Spezza's health?
Health? No.
Groin, back?
No, I think he's okay.
You think it's more a juggling? Do you think he's taking the leadership role too seriously?
It's a lot of pressure, especially when you got a bunch of donkeys chanting Alfie's name in their worst performance of the season. But no, I just...
Yeah, I don't get people who hang stuff on leadership like that. I don't get it.
That's a little hard.
How do you know what the leadership culture of that dressing room is? Whether Alfredson's wearing the C, I think most people who knew someone around the team or knew media knew that Jason Spezza is the leader of that locker room, whether or not he's wearing the C. He's the guy who brings everybody together. You listen to anyone who talks about him on the radio. Spezza's a great captain material.
Even ex-teammates like Zenon Konopka stood up for him. He didn't have to do that. So, no, I...
Guys respect him. He's a likable, respectable guy.
He's an offensive player. They need to find a combination that works with him. And the whole team needs to play better as a team and support each other. If they can get that turnaround, then they're going to be in a fight for the playoffs.
You wouldn't break up the top line, though.
No.
put two and two just to balance it out a little bit. I don't know if you want to, because McCullough and Greening have been so bad. Or Conacher, for that matter. Conacher's been okay. I don't know. I've been disappointed with his production levels, though. And he doesn't shoot anymore.
See, I was expecting that, though.
Were you?
I didn't see him going into the season as a legit top six forward on this team. I do love the energy that he brings. And like, that guy cares. His give-a-shit meter is off the charts. He cares.
And he's pesky. And he backtracks. He agitates. He does all the little things that you like.
It's just, he's not yet anyways. He's not a natural top six point producer. Maybe, I think they got to give Zibanejad a longer look on that line.
Well, you'd hope so. Well, it doesn't matter who you play with Spezza. Even if it was Bobby Ryan, those two have not demonstrated any chemistry in the time that they've been paired together. So, internally, what do you do? At this point, I think you almost hope that Mark Stone can come up, unfortunately.
Or do you give Mike Hoffman a chance on that left wing and move McCulloch down to the third line?
But, you have Eric Condra, who's resumed skating. I think, was he taking reps on the fourth line?
Yeah, he was the extra guy. And he was doing line rushes on the fourth line. Sunday. Now. I don't think he's playing tomorrow.
Yeah. So, there's your replacement for Matt Cassian. So, if you decide to call up another forward who can provide a little bit of secondary scoring, you have to make a subsequent move. So, who do you send down? Conacher has to clear waivers, I believe, still, because of his age. I don't know. I honestly... What do? You don't send Zibanejad down?
No.
Tough spot to be.
Derek Grant's playing well.
Yeah, no, he's been fine. He's been the fourth line center that you need. Wins his faceoffs, responsible defensively.
Kills.
Yeah. You need forwards like that on your fourth line. You can do a little specialty team.
It's not panic time yet, but they usually gotta start figuring it out.
And I don't really think that they can move Greening. Like that contract, yeah. That lack of production.
It's disappointing because you hear about his speed and how he's a workout freak in the gym. What I noticed
likeable
about him.
Likeable kid. Smart. Oh. Well-spoken.
He's got a lot of tools, but what I noticed when he's playing well, he's playing a simple north-south game.
More assertive.
Finishing his checks. Just keeping it simple, getting shots on net. And usually that's happening when he's playing with Spezza. Not that I think that he's an ideal line mate with Spezza. But what I find when he goes on that so-called checking line with Neil and Smith, he tends to play more with the puck and try things more when I don't think that's his game. He's a big body. He's just got to chip the puck in, chase it, punish their D. That's what you got to do. So you got to beat up the other team's D all night. And that's where I think he'll be successful. And that's what he does in the playoffs.
I wonder if it's easier for him in the playoffs because he's facing a team four to seven times. You're going to grind out a team. So it becomes mentally easier. If you're playing Dallas, for example, you're trying to grind out wins.
Well, the other thing, too, is there's not as much fighting in the playoffs. So if you're going to run around, you're not going to have to drop the mitts as often as you would in the regular season if you're running around every shift. Maybe that's part of it.
One thing that we have not talked about to this point, attendance. Sierra Leader was on TSN 1200 this morning talking to Tigor about attendance, and he essentially said the reason why attendance looks lower this year is not because they've sold less tickets. It's because of new policies that have provided discounted or free tickets to season ticket holders in the past. So on a per game basis, Ottawa is generating more revenue off ticket sales, but there are less butts in the stands. I think to this point, a lot of people noticed it. I know it's been kind of that coincidental thing. Melnick was on his, his media tour this summer trying to generate some kind of, or at least lobby anyways. He was trying to lobby fans to get on his side to try and get the casino issue pushed forward and bring attention to it and hopefully generate a third revenue stream for the Senators. So that was a little convenient, I think, whether it's pure coincidence or not, I don't know. Is it embarrassing for the org as a Canadian city?
I think when everyone else is selling out, it looks that way. It's tough too. My problem is they don't sell that home opener. They don't sell out a Saturday game against a Canadian franchise, and they don't come close to selling out San Jose, Anaheim. That's what's disappointing. Bobby Ryan, brand new player in town. They're on a six-game road trip. They finished 2-2-2 after playing some very tough teams out west. I know it's Jersey, but to not sell out that game, that's a little disappointing.
It's a big burn, though.
It's like, huge. What's
capacity is what, 25? I think they say 19.5 is capacity.
I think, well, I think it goes to 25 with standing and everything, but I think their sellout is 19.1 or 19.2 is an official sellout.
I thought it used to be 18.5.
It used to be, but I think it's 19.1 or something.
Yeah. So they haven't sold out their first five home games.
I think Montreal was a sellout. I think they got 19.2 for that.
Okay. So tomorrow against Boston, leader said, supposed to sell out. He's expecting big things for December. They have Toronto, Pittsburgh. There's some other team in there.
Montreal,
maybe Boston, Detroit. Are you concerned about where this franchise is? We've heard the owner cry broke.
I think it's part the town. People like winners. People like the last 2 years, nothing was expected from these teams. Number one, with the rebuild and how low they finished going into two seasons ago. Then last year with all the injuries. And they just played an exciting, pesky type of attitude. So a lot of people like to see it. This year starts off very negative with getting blown out against Anaheim and San Jose on the West Coast. Maybe people aren't looking forward to spend the buck. The other thing is, too, they're playing a lot of go-home games right now.
Yeah, they said 20 home games over November and December, which is almost double what it was the year before.
If you're going to go to a couple games, you spread those out. You're not going to go to
that's hard, right? You have 3 games in a week, and you're trying to sell, you know, what, 6,000 seats? If they're trying to close in on 1,300 or 13,000 seats and ticket holders, you're looking at, you know, upwards of 7,000 empty seats that you're trying to sell on a per game basis. Like that's quite the task.
Look at some of the teams too. They played Dallas, Florida, New Jersey. Like those aren't big draws anyways. Islanders, but the games that I mentioned, I would have liked to see sell out.
Are you pissed off about the lack of Saturday night games?
I understand it.
Well, they're trying to make more money through their deal with Sportsnet.
Yeah, and they weren't going to get primetime CBC coverage anyways.
Right, but from a fan perspective,
it kind of sucks.
Fans want to go to Saturday night games. That is synonymous with hockey in Canada, are those Saturday night games. You can turn them into events. You can do cool things before them. Draw fans to the rink early.
Go party after.
Exactly. And is it worth it? Is the money from Rogers worth it? Apparently it is.
Oh, that's their call. I don't know. I don't know how to answer that day.
From a fan's perspective, I think it sucks.
I think it sucks, too, because I prefer the Saturday games, and I've never been a fan of my team playing an afternoon weekend game. I don't mind afternoon weekend games with other teams because if you have nothing to do, you can watch three or four games. But I don't know. The Sens play at 1 o'clock. That you're down at 5 o'clock. There's nothing to look forward to in the evening. No, I for sure prefer that Saturday night
And nobody game. Wants to be day drunk.
No, that's the other thing. Be hungover
by
7 o'clock.
6 o'clock at night. Yeah. No, no fun. Not fun. But I think, like, listening to the leader's interview, I think he alluded to what's kind of been a problem is there's nothing around the area. There's no, like, development is slow. He said over the next 5 years, there's some exciting things in the pipeline. He talked about, like, the Tanger outlets that are going in on Huntmar. And he talked about the Bass Pro Shop. But, I mean, like, I'm not going to spend an afternoon at the Bass Pro Shop and then go to a game. I don't think anyone is.
You don't want some free hot dogs on game days at the car dealerships?
No. Is that what they do?
There's a couple that do. Yeah.
Good God.
Free barbecue every Sens home game.
Yeah, there's no compelling reason to go to the rink, like, hours before the game. Like, there's nothing organized by the organization. There's literally nothing.
Have you checked out Sport Check Bar?
Of interest? No, I haven't been yet.
No, me neither. I heard it's pretty cool. I heard it looks like real sports.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool. They did a good job on it, but no, I haven't checked it out. But you're right. You can't. There's no restaurants and bars and hotels.
There's no buzz. There's no buzz around going to a game early. It's just you show up, go to the parking lot, walk into the rink, go back to your car once the game's over. Sometimes with 10 minutes left.
Even if you're going to the Centrum after and you're going to make a night of it, you're still going to have to fight the traffic.
Navigate for like 25 minutes, yeah.
Instead of just walking across the street.
Yep.
No, I agree.
Closing in on the 10-minute mark. So we're at 45 minutes. Rob Volman, who wrote Hockey Abstract, the first Hockey Abstract, is going to come on the program in about 10 minutes. So why don't we take a break, relax, recharge, talk to Rob when we get back.
Sounds good.
All right. Stay tuned, listeners. We'll be right back. All right, listeners, joining us on the line is the man responsible for writing the Hockey Abstract, Rob Ullman. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
Man, I'm doing so good that Adam Oates thinks it's disrespectful.
Awesome. Awesome intro. Now, Rob, this is interesting because you sent me an email earlier this week asking to come on the podcast. We hadn't recorded in a while, actually. And through no fault of our own, I should add. But yeah, you approached us to come back on the show to talk a little Sens hockey. And as a man responsible for projecting the Senators to have a 32.2% chance of winning the President's Trophy, the mic is to you, sir. What would you like to say about the Senators this season?
You know, I was actually on Toronto radio earlier because I had them near the bottom of the league. And so they're actually quite jovial about the fact that I was wrong. With Toronto, it's a little bit different, though. I mean, the reason I had Toronto at the bottom of the league is because, you know, they're playing in their own end and they're playing without the puck. They're getting outshot and outplayed every night. And really well relying on having really high shooting percentages and really high save percentages to stay in it. And that hasn't changed. That's still the case. So Toronto, I'm still watching because I still cling to the reasons behind my projection there. Now, with Ottawa, it's different. Now, the reason I had Ottawa projected to actually finish first overall is because of a system that's, of course, in the book, in Rob Bowman's Hockey Abstract, where I try to take the standings and then remove as much of the luck-based factors as possible. So I tried to account for injuries. I accounted for the shooting and save percentages. I accounted for special teams, for records and one-goal games, for overtime, for shootout, as much as I could. And it's explained in more detail in the book. And as you know, last year, the Senators had horrible luck with injuries. Other than that, they weren't necessarily that unlucky, but they had really bad luck with injuries and yet still did very well. And so as a result, when you crunched all the numbers, and of course I did take off-season moves into account, Ottawa really did bubble close to the top. Now, why aren't they at the top this year? Is it bad luck again? I wish I could say that, but the answer is no. They've had virtually no injuries, and actually their percentages have been actually higher than they should be. Their special teams have been good. The only real dose of bad luck, I guess, is their overtime shootout record is a little weak. But overall, I mean, they haven't been an unlucky team. They've been relatively average. So that's when I sort of dig a little deeper, and I notice a big change with the Ottawa Senators this year versus last year. And that big change is their defense. The number of shots they're allowing, the number of attempted shots, scoring chances, whatever you want to count it, they're allowing a lot more of those this year than last year. And before I continue, let me just pause there. Am I on track so far, or have I already gone off the deep end here?
No. I think anyone who's watched this team over the past 18 games has noticed that their play within the defensive end has been absolutely terrible. I mean, Paul McLean just yesterday had spent, 45 minutes, 50 minutes just working on the breakout. And it just seems every time Ottawa gains the opposition's blue line, they're getting one shots and no shots, and the puck's going back the other way. And then once the opposition gains the Senators' blue line, Ottawa's just getting hemmed in.
Right, and that's very confusing to me because even when I look at their rosters, I mean, I like their off-season moves. And even now, I mean, Clark MacArthur, for instance, I think I said he was going to do well. I think he's doing great. Kyle Turris is doing better than I thought. And I think Bobby Ryan's been certainly solid. Of course, Erik Karlsson's always solid, and you know, he's new in a sense that he wasn't there last year. But the one thing I can't figure out is Jason Spezza and Milan Mihailuk. Now, you're watching all the games. I'm watching a few games, but leaning a bit more on the analytics. But man, they look awful in terms of the analytics. How are they looking on the ice?
I think that's pretty fair point, especially.
They're producing points, but they're getting dominated in the possession battle.
Yeah, they're having a big trouble in their own end, and even Milan Mihailuk looks a little bit slower, and they're getting hemmed in more often than they're hemming the other team in. That's for sure. Spezza had a big hat trick game, and he's been getting some points on the power play. So he's almost at a point a game, but they've been having problems.
So has the coach, have they been saying anything about this, about Spezza Mihailuk? Do they have any ideas on how to solve that problem?
I was looking at their usage patterns, Rob. And like today, for example, I was looking at their usage patterns on extraskater.com, and I noticed when they're playing an opponent who's, you know, at an opposing barn, when they're playing an away game, I guess is the short way to put it. When they're playing an away game, the opposition coaches are still matching up their best defensive pair most frequently against the Spezza line, which usually has Milan Mikolic on it. And the Turris line has benefited a little bit from that. But when you see Ottawa playing at home, Paul McLean's doing a better job of getting Spezza's line away from the top pairing. But other than that, it's really tough to say what's the cause of the problem. I know Jason Spezza had his second back surgery last year. Milan Mikolic is coming off knee problems where he went to Germany for that treatment that Kobe Bryant's received and popularized. I don't know if it's all attributable to the injuries. I know Spezza has had his line mates juggled constantly throughout the course of the season. They're trying to find a right fit for him. And to this point, no one's had success playing with Spezza this year. Whether that's his fault or everyone else's, I don't know. But if you look at his with or without you numbers, he's been terrible this year.
So I guess my bottom line, and you know, for those that are listening, if you want to know a little bit more about what I'm talking about, if you go to hockeyabstract.com and then look for player usage charts, that's sort of what we're talking about when we're talking about MacArthur and Turris in one situation and Spezza and Mikalik in another. And you mentioned extra skater, and that information is there as well in more of a table, whereas the link I just gave, it's in a nice chart with bubbles and colors and wonder, it's wonderful.
But, yes, do check it out. It's a great site.
I guess my bottom line, though, is that, you know, in Toronto, I still stand by my criticism, or not my criticism, but my projections, because I say they are, you know, they still have those fundamental problems on which I base the projection, you know, playing without the puck, playing in their own end, and so on. But Ottawa, I mean, a lot of the projection I had with Ottawa was not based on what's going on right now. It was based more on what they were doing last year. They were not allowing a lot of shots that last year. They were not allowing their opponents to gain the zone and to, you know, create scoring opportunities for themselves, to play with the puck. Ottawa was, it seems to me, much better defensively in terms of analytics last year than this year. And it's like night and day. And that's why normally I don't sweat my projections this early in the year, but that's one reason why I'm sweating it a little bit now. So now that being said, there's still plenty of time, and I just can't see a team going from a really strong defensive team to one of the worst defensive teams just because Jason Spezza is back. There's obviously something more going on, and hopefully it's something that Paul McLean can address.
You mentioned that injuries made it tough to evaluate their true talent in your projections. Do you think what we're seeing is their true talent, or do you think that because of the injuries and guys are taking a long time to come back for them, like Cowan and Carlson, do you think that has something to do with it as well?
You see, yeah, that's a good question. Because first of all, injuries aren't cut and dry. It's not like you're healthy or you're injured. There's a whole spectrum. There's people that play with injuries and so on. And so there's a bit of a spectrum to it. And you're right, last year, with all those injuries, it was hard to evaluate how good Ottawa really is. Because when you take a player out of the lineup and you put another guy into the lineup, it's possible that you can't just add that guy back to the lineup because the guy that replaced him might have actually played just as well as he would have, or perhaps better. And maybe there was a little bit of that going on in Ottawa last year. I mean, some of those young players that they were using, because everybody bumps up the depth chart when someone leaves, and a lot of those young players were perhaps playing pretty close to the players that they were replacing. I mean, not quite at Eric Carlson's level, of course, but you know, we're actually playing close to the level of the guys that we're replacing. And as a result, I was perhaps exaggerating the impact of those injuries. But of course, all that being said, I mean, the team that played last year was more effective than the team that's on the ice right now. And the only real differences this year, of course, are Alfredsson and Gonchar. And those aren't, that's not something that would cause this dramatic a difference, especially when you have guys like Clark and Arthur in the lineup. So, I'm really not sure. I haven't really made sense of it yet. I'd like to watch maybe another, you know, another 20 or 30 games or so, and see maybe this is just a temporary aberration. Maybe some guys are playing hurt, or maybe they are doing something that's fundamentally flawed defensively.
Yeah, it's interesting to kind of just look at the offseason, the additions and the subtractions, not from a point perspective, but I know losing Jakob Silfverberg and losing Daniel Alfredsson, who were probably their best two-way
two-way wingers probably hurt the Senators a little more than people would have liked to have let on. Clark MacArthur, great addition. He kind of fits that two-way mold. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Peter Schaefer, the way he controls the puck in the offensive zone. But Bobby Ryan's been, I think, a bit of a revelation. I think he's come better than advertised from a possession standpoint as well, Rob. So it's tough to really pinpoint where Ottawa's struggled. I think the bottom six forwards have been worse than they have been over the past 2 years under McLean in terms of being able to hem just the opposition into their own end and then not give away the puck and turn the puck over, have the opposition generate more shots. And the defensive pairings have been a mess just right from the get-go. And
yeah, well, a quick look at a player usage chart. I can take a look. I mean, Carlson looks to be doing fine. And so is, you say Mark Methot or Methot?
Methot.
Methot. He seems to be doing okay as well. But it looks like, this name's even tougher here. How do you say that? Weirkoch?
Weirkoch. Yep.
Okay, well, you have to forgive me. I'm terrible at some of
it's all good.
And, Weirkoch seems to be struggling, actually, a little bit. And then what else? Griba. He's Bobby Ryan. He's a forward, but at least I can say his name. All right. he seems doing great, actually. So, I don't know. Jared Cowan, I guess there was concerns about him as well. Yeah, he's not looking very good so far, analytically.
So, Rob, here's a question for you then. These guys have been here. Most of these players have been here for the past 2 years. Is there any reason for optimism that you can see from an analytics point of view that these players can get back to where they were? Because it seems like Creech and I have discussed a lot of context, whether it's injuries, line mates, what have you. Is there any reason analytically to think that Ottawa still has a plenty of time to turn around?
Yes, there is. If you read a lot of this stuff, I mean, of course, my book wasn't just about that one projection. That was just one chapter out of 20. But if you go through it, you can actually see there's a few times where we talk about some of the Senators and their situations. They really do have a solid lineup. A lot of the players that we've talked about, very quietly, you see them featured prominently in a lot of those lists of the best defensive players and the guys that play tough minutes and the great penalty killers. If you just thumb through the book and look at the various tables, you'll actually see a lot of, you know, Senators' names showing up in maybe unexpected players. The chapter on do-it-all players, for instance. So the Senators have a lot of talent, and it's just hard for me to believe. I mean, even great teams sometimes go through stretches where they play terribly. And I guess the cause for hope is that, you know, what do you want to put more emphasis on? 48 excellent games last year. Not to mention, I think you could see them moving up in the season previous, the 2011-12. You could see them, you know, at the start of the year, at the end of the year, improving their game and really arriving, really finishing on a strong note. So do you want to put more emphasis on, you know, 15 to 20 games so far or, you know, the past year or two? So, you know, I think there is cause for hope. They can still turn it around. But, you know, you do have to look at it soberly and admit that the Senators really are not playing well right now. It's not bad luck. They're not playing well right now, and they need to improve that. But they've got the player talent, and I think they should be able to.
Goaltending. Well, we've heard a number of pundits come out and say maybe the issue is that Ottawa's goaltending, which has regressed. I think anyone who looked at Craig Anderson's numbers last year would have said, oh, this is a guy whose numbers are going to get worse. Do you think that goaltending perhaps might have masked some of Ottawa's problems last year, or was Ottawa simply just a better defensive team last year than this year?
That's a great question. And I think, yes, we were all expecting Craig Anderson to cool off. In fact, wasn't that the record for the highest save percentage in the season?
He was on pace to set a record, I believe, for his save percentage.
Yeah, I think everybody was expecting Craig Anderson to cool off. We know he's an above-average goalie, but I don't think anyone actually thought he was the league's best goalie, that this is something he can post year in, year out. However, that was taken into account into my projection. I did pull him back closer to his true level, and I still had Ottawa in first. So, but yeah, he might have been getting some help defensively. It also just could have been one of those hot years. I mean, look at any goalie. They have years where their save percentage is much higher than normal. And I think Craig Anderson, we all know he's an above-average goalie. That's what he is. And it looks like the Robin Lehner. Lehner?
Lehner, yep.
Lehner, okay. All right. I'm worse than Don Cherry, I swear it. It looks like he's doing great, though. It looks like he's got some great percentages. So I think overall, Ottawa's always going to have above-average goaltending. That's a good pair they've got there. But, yeah, I think everyone knew that last year that was a little bit of a treat. And I don't think it masked any problems. Even if you take Craig Anderson out of the equation, that was one of the league's best defensive teams last year. And this year, of course, they're one of the worst. So I think that's their one, and I would say only, problem. And they fixed their defense, and they're going to be right there fighting for a home seat by season's end.
Yeah, we agree. Like, what we spent the majority of the podcast talking about was, like, they're getting the goaltending, they're scoring goals, they just need to clean up the rest of it.
Actually, I have another question for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
We were talking about internal solutions to Ottawa's problems. We think, well, at least I feel like Ottawa, and Creech feels the same way, actually, as well. Ottawa's kind of in a stage where they're kind of caught between two places. Are they a good team? Are they getting better? Should they look at internal options before going externally? From that perspective, do you think there's anybody available or who would be available that could help this team out on the blue line?
Yeah, defensemen are hard to come by. I was actually rather surprised that, say, Ladislav Schmid went for such a low price, because I think there's at least 7, 8, 9 teams in the league that would have offered a lot more than that for a guy who can play, you know, that legit top 4 minutes and, you know, top defensive minutes and kill penalties. So surprised. But I think he's the exception, not the rule. I think it's going to be very difficult to get a strong defensive top four defenseman. I agree that if the Senators were to make a move, I agree that that is the move to make, to get like another, say, Chris Phillips kind of guy, but maybe someone sort of younger and on the way up and hitting his prime. I think that would be, if you were to make a move, that would be the move. Now, whether a move is necessary, I don't think so. Maybe they just need to make maybe a more cosmetic move, maybe something more on the depth lines. But I don't think that any major moves are necessary. There's no reason to hit the panic button, I guess is what I'm saying. If you look at their lineup, that's a great lineup.
Yeah, it'd be nice if Alfredson was still on it. But, yeah, I agree with you 100% there.
Can we talk about Zach Smith for a while? That's an easy one.
Yeah.
We were talking about him off air too, and usually I'm pretty harsh on him when he's not playing well. But I think that right now he's skating well and he's playing well, and I think that maybe
I just think he's saddled with some bad line.
Yeah,
I think
maybe
he's
some
a lot
improved
better.
Line mates will.
Watching him play, he plays a dump and chase. He plays on a dump and chase line with Chris Neal and Colin Greening usually, and
let's just say that I don't really think his wingers are cut out to carry the puck over the blue line and make plays. So what do you have to say about Zach Smith?
Not a lot, actually. It looks like he's not having his best year, but I think we've talked about him before, that he is actually a really good secondary player, that he actually hits a lot of the checklist. Like, when you bust out your checklist of those money puck value players, he does hit a lot of those check boxes. And so he's a great guy to have on your lineup. I mean, you can't have a lineup full of Eric Karlsson's and Jason Spezza's in the salary cap era. You need to stretch the dollar. You need to have guys that can provide that extra value. And I think Zach Smith, I mean, I don't think he's playing that well right now, or at least he's not playing his best. But I think over the long run, he is the type of guy that you need. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, he's cost efficient. Colin Greening, I'd argue, who's slated to earn $2.6 million starting next season, I think he's that 26, 27? I think he's 27 now. And, you know, he's slated to get a salary increase, and I think he was a totally replaceable guy that they could have brought in. You know, for me personally, he's a guy who's expendable because you have prospects within the minors who can come up, do just as good of a job, and earn a third of the salary.
Yeah, when you talk about the cap efficiency, that's actually one thing I always liked about the Senators. And if you have a copy of my other book, The Hockey Prospectus 2013-14, you know, that annual guide that we do, there's a new chart we added just this year called Cap Efficiency, which on one side of the chart it has players' cap hit, you know, millions, and on the other side it has the Hockey Prospectus official stat there, that GBT, that just estimates roughly, crudely, what a player's value is in terms of offense, defense, everything. And in that regard, the Senators are in a good position because a lot of their players are actually in the good zone, so to speak, with nice gray circles. They have a very cost-efficient team. And some of the guys that weren't very cost-efficient, two of them, like Gonchar and Alfredsson, were two of the guys let go. So I really think that they've done a good job in terms of deciding who to keep and who to let go in terms of cap efficiency. But I just noticed that Zach Smith was actually on the wrong side of that on this chart. So it looks like last year he wasn't making his money either. So I don't know, maybe we have to revisit Zach Smith.
Yeah, actually, it's interesting too because Paul McLean came out and said he's been one of their most consistent players over the course of the first 18 games. But I think he's a better player than what he's shown, especially when he's playing with Chris Neal and Colin Greening. But Rob, I'd love to talk to you at the end of the season when we have a larger sample size of games to look over. Thank you very, very much for coming on. Listeners, you can follow Rob Volman on Twitter at RobVolmanNHL. And Rob, where can they find their work?
Well, you can, if you go to hockeyabstract.com, you can find my articles, you can listen to my radio shows, you can play around with the player usage chart, the team luck tool, and actually if you click on Rob Volman's Hockey Abstract, there's a link there, that would actually give you details about the book. And I just want to give it a quick plug, because you can go to Amazon right now, and you can order my book, Hockey Abstract, and the Hockey Prospectus 2013-14 for under $40. You can get both books. Get it delivered just in time for Christmas. It's perfect for your family, for your postman, for your neighbor, for everybody. You get both. And actually, in the Hockey Prospectus 2013-14, there's this guy named Brian McDonald that did a write-up on the Ottawa Senators. He did a fascinating study on trying to figure out the true save percentage of a goaltender using, like, the number of shots he's faced over the course of his career, standard deviation curves. It's really fascinating. And he looks at Anderson, Bishop, and Lehner. And he actually concludes they made the right choice, I think, keeping Lehner instead of Bishop. So check that out.
Did they make the right choice by keeping Anderson and not Bishop?
Well, I think that just assumed that Anderson was the right guy to take. Well, let me just read this off here. It said, did Ottawa take the right goaltender? The probability that Bishop is better than Lehner is only 41%. The probability that Anderson is better than Bishop is 76%. And the probability that Anderson is better than Lehner is 65%.
Yeah. See, I was having a Twitter argument today with the guy because I thought Ottawa had two players on their roster, and Bishop and Lehner, who are younger, cheaper, played at a high level, not quite at the level that Anderson did last season. But because of that and because of the fact that they're making less money, I saw Bishop as a backup and Lehner as the number one. And eventually you're going to have to move Craig Anderson to make room for Robin Lehner anyways. So, you know, you have two known commodities in Lehner and Bishop, so I thought maybe Ottawa could have allocated their payroll a little bit better and moved Anderson for a higher package, and you could have used Anderson's money to bring in another player.
Well, you know, I think the bottom line is, you know, I play chess, and we all know that Bishops can only move diagonally, so better off with Anderson.
Awesome. Rob, thank you very much for coming on the show, and I would love to talk to you by the end of the season.
And I hope they're in first when we do that.
We do too.
At least two of us.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
All right, take care, Rob. Thanks.
Bye.
Cheers.
There's a surgical light and a shaky hand. Two takes awake, she's off with.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Thanks again to Rob Volman for coming on. Creech, I want to keep this short, wrap it up with a strong conclusion. I won't drag this out like a Keisha Shante tweet bomb. What'd you make of the Lehner thing yesterday?
I guess I thought it was funny. It was kind of, got to feel a little embarrassed for Ray Emery. Kind of sucks. Basically, it looks like someone who is acting like they're still in high school had a Twitter beef about some comments that are made, and Robin handled it well, and he had his army to support him. I don't know what else to say about that. Whatever.
It generated a lot of traffic for the website, so I'm not going to complain. Echo all those points. I thought he handled it quite well. He didn't even engage her until it was over, and he just the winky emoticon was just perfect.
Does she have an album coming out? Or?
I don't know. She's a BET host.
I didn't even know that till yesterday.
Which is, that's a pretty big deal.
That like, is a good job.
I've never really been compelled. I haven't received a gift or like a Sens jersey or bought a Sens jersey since Marian Hossa left. I almost feel compelled to get a Robin Lehner one. But when we talked about this off air, I'm worried that they're going to switch up the jersey soon.
I've never owned, purchased, wore a goaltender jersey. But he would be the one that I'd look into first for sure. But yeah, I don't know if the NHL's deal with Reebok on the jerseys expires in a couple of years. I think it might. I don't know if they'll be going to Bauer or someone else. Not really sure about that, but I'd assume that there'd be a jersey update in the next couple of years.
They do. They've been wearing those like home and away since 2007.
Yeah,
and they're hideous.
They're not great. I don't know. Maybe they'll adjust the logo. Maybe they'll go back to the 2D for us.
Hopefully they crowdsource the jersey.
They must know that's what everyone wants.
Oh my god, they're just awful. They're so bland, and the logo is so terrible. They can't afford to do worse. I won't say that. They could do worse.
That's true. It could be the SNES.
Yeah. You got anything to wrap up with? Have we missed anything that you want to talk about?
We talked about Keisha Shante, so
we
probably
got
talked about
everything that you needed to. All right. Listeners, thanks once again for checking us out. And Rob Ullman.
That Zach Smith bomb totally went over my head too. I thought he was looking at some numbers and I was pumped because usually I'm hard on Zach Smith when he's not playing his game. I was like, all right, he wants to talk some Zach Smith. No, he just wanted a name he could pronounce.
Oh, well. Anyways.
My bad.
It's all good. It's all good. Anyways, that's it for another episode of the Sixth Sense Podcast. Thanks for checking us out. Keep checking out the website. We're out.